Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading of the ninth chapter of the seventh canto entitled Prahlad Pacifies Lord Nrsingadev with Prayers. And text number two. Sakshat Shri. I'm going to read the whole thing. Sakshat Shri Prishita Devar. Drishtva Tang Mahad Adbhutam. Adrishta Shruta Purvatvat. Sanopeyaya Sankita. Sakshat Shri Prishita Devar. Drishtva Tang Mahad Adbhutam. Adrishta Shruta Purvatvat. Sanopeyaya Sankita. Sakshat Shri Prishita Devar. Drishtva Tang Mahad Adbhutam. Adrishta Shruta Purvatvat. Sanopeyaya Sankita. Matajis, please. Sakshat, directly, Shrihi, the goddess of fortune, Preshita, being requested to go forward before the Lord, Devahi, by all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Drishtva, after seeing, Tam, him, Lord Nrsingadev, Mahat, very big, Adbhutam, wonderful, Adrishta, never seen, Ashruta, never heard of, Purvatvat, due to being previously, Sa, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, na, not, Upayaya, went before the Lord, Shankita, being very much afraid. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So the goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, was requested to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who, because of fear, could not do so. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. Purport. The Lord has unlimited forms and bodily features, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anaharim, Anantarupam. These are all situated in Vaikuntha. Yet Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, being inspired by Lila Shakti, could not appreciate this unprecedented form of the Lord. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya recites the following verses from the Brahmanda Purana. Adrishta Shruta Purva Twat Anyaik Sadaranarjanahi Nrsingam Shankiteva Shrir Loka Mohayano Yayao Prahrade Chaiva Vatsalya Darshanaya Harerapi Gyatva Manas Tata Brahma Prahradang Preshayatada Ekatraikasya Vatsalyam Visheshad Darshayad Darhi Avarasyapi Mohaya Kramenaiva Pivatsalaha. In other words, for the common men, the form of the Lord as Nrsingadev is certainly unseen and wonderful. But for a devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearsome form of the Lord is not at all extraordinary. By the grace of the Lord, a devotee can very easily understand how the Lord can appear in any form he likes. Therefore, the devotee is never afraid of such a form. Because of special favor bestowed upon Prahlad Maharaj, he remained silent and unafraid, even though all the demigods, including even Lakshmi Devi, were afraid of Lord Nrsingadev. Narayana Paraha. Narayana Paraksarvena Kutashchana Bibhyati. Not only is a pure devotee of Lord Narayan like Prahlad Maharaj unafraid of any dangerous condition of material life, but also if the Lord appears to mitigate the fear of a devotee, the devotee maintains his status of fearlessness in all circumstances. Om Gyanate Mirandasya Kanachana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitangena Tasmai Shri Yudhave Namaha Namang Vishnu Parai Krishnam Saibudale Shimate Paladananda Swanitwane Namang Vishnu Parai Krishnam Saibudale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swanitwane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishya Shuni Vati Paschyati Adi Shatarne. So it's interesting here how so far all the other demigods have already gone before the Lord and offered their obeisances and offered their prayers, yet none of them could actually pacify Lord Nrsingadev. And in fact, all of them were gripped with fear upon seeing, as mentioned here, this extraordinary and wonderful form of Lord Nrsingadev. It's interesting, actually, that the demigods would be gripped with fear because, after all, they are devotees. Even Lakshmi Devi, she was pushed ahead by all the other demigods to try to pacify Lord Nrsingadev, thinking that since she's his eternal consort, that she could surely pacify him. After all, she resides with Vishnu, with Narayan in the Vaikuntha Lokas, on the planets there. So obviously she has a certain standard of purity in her devotion in order to inhabit the spiritual planets. But yet even she is gripped with fear and can't properly pacify Lord Nrsingadev. So how is it that Prahlad Maharaj can pacify Lord Nrsingadev? It's quite amazing. So the verse that Prabhupada quotes in the purport, Narayana Parasar Sarve Na Kushchana Bibhyati, it's from the Bhagavatam 6:17:28. And this verse, it sheds a little bit of light upon this. In that verse, it mentions, the translation is, devotees solely engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. We recently actually read this particular verse. It was in the previous canto, where Mother Parvati was cursing King Chitraketu. Parvati had cursed Chitraketu for kind of half sarcastically, half jokingly commenting on how it was that Parvati could be sitting naked on the lap of Lord Shiva in front of the assembly of sages. And Parvati took great offense at that, thinking it was criticism of Lord Shiva, when in fact it wasn't criticism. It was actually a hidden glorification of Lord Shiva, that he's so exalted in his understanding and spiritualization that he's not agitated in the slightest. He's not bewildered by Parvati being there. But at the same time, also to point out that this isn't standard behavior. Chitraketu made this comment, so other people who may be viewing the scene wouldn't misunderstand, thinking that this is actually the standard of spiritual life. I have some naked girl sit on my lap, and have people sit around me and then call it a spiritual gathering. That's not a spiritual gathering. So Parvati actually took it as an offense, and so she cursed Chitraketu, but Chitraketu was so transcendently situated that he wasn't in the slightest upset or bewildered by this curse. Rather, he paid his obeisances to Mother Parvati and basically thanked her for this wonderful opportunity, which actually quite surprised Mother Parvati. She was thinking, who is this personality basically thanking me for cursing him? And then Lord Shiva went on to glorify King Chitraketu and his high degree of spiritual realization. So this is the whole point, is that devotees who have achieved the standard of purity through and through, like King Chitraketu, like Prahlad Maharaj, they're not interested in what circumstances of life they might find themselves in. They're not interested in going to the heavenly planets. They're not interested, for instance, King Chitraketu at this point, he was among the Vidyadharas, which is actually a very pious body to have, be one of the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka. And so these devotees, they're not interested whether they're in hell, whether they're liberated, whether they're in this earthly planet and the heavenly planets. All they're interested in is they're continuing their devotional service for Krishna. So this brings up the point of Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Devi wasn't quite there, even though she was inhabiting the Vaikuntha planets, but still, she had some desires that she was clinging to. She really liked being Lakshmi Devi. She liked having her own followers. She liked being the controller of fortune and having people worship her for that. That's actually why she was performing austerities and penances at one point to gain entrance into the pastimes of Vrindavan, along with other gopis. Because she realized that she wasn't capable, she wasn't willing to give up this desire of being worshipped and having followers and being the controller of wealth and fortune. And this desire is what causes her fear, is what prevents her from pacifying Lord Nrsingadev. And this is also why all the other demigods and nobody else present except for Prahlad Maharaj could actually pacify Lord Nrsingadev, because everyone else was gripped with fear. Everyone else had something that they were afraid that they could lose, because this form of Lord Nrsingadev was so ferocious. So the devotees, they're not interested in these different things, and their only concern is executing their devotional service. No matter how much endeavor that may entail, whether their service is, from a materialistic perspective, easy, or whether the service, from a materialistic perspective, is difficult, whether it entails a lot of austerity and hardship, whether it requires long hours, or whether it's something very easy to perform, or doesn't take so much time, per se. That's also why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Matra sparshas tu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tang satiksha svabharata. Now this is a pretty basic verse. It's a pretty standard one that everyone eventually memorizes. And many people kind of discount it because it's one of those verses that everyone memorizes, thinking, oh, that's just, you know, a standard verse that, you know, all the bhaktas memorize and everyone in Bhakti Shastri memorizes. And, you know, for me, I need these really rasika verses to memorize these, you know, intimate pastimes, and I need something that really comes up to the exalted level of realization that I have, and I'll only memorize those verses. But no, it's not really like that. It's these verses actually that help keep us situated in Krishna consciousness. It's these verses that are the most fundamental and basic and essential for us to actually understand. After all, if we don't even understand these basic verses, how can we actually achieve, how can we follow in the footsteps of these other great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and King Chitraketu, Dhruva Maharaj, all these exalted souls that we read about, or even exalted souls that some of us in the room actually met, like Srila Prabhupada. It's not that only these exalted souls can actually achieve a high degree of realization and the rest of us are just left out in the cold. It's not like that at all. This spiritual science was given to us by our predecessor acharyas, most recently by Srila Prabhupada and his disciples who are passing on the message also. And this message is being transmitted to us so we can also follow in the footsteps. That's what it means to be an anuga. For instance, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada mentions that we are all Rupanugas. Rupanuga means Rupa Anuga, one who follows in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. It's not that we're all Rupa Goswami appreciators or Rupa Goswami wannabes or Rupa Goswami pretenders. No, we're Anugas. We follow in the footsteps, meaning that the spiritual science has been laid down. And if we apply this spiritual science, then we too can achieve a transcendental position similar to Srila Rupa Goswami. We can gain entrance to the spiritual world. We can become exalted, spiritually liberated devotees. That's part of the problem with other traditions around the world. For instance, in the Council of Nicaea, they made a very subtle but very critical grammatical distinction, saying that Jesus was begotten and not created. Most people could care less. What's the difference, begotten or created? But it's a profound difference, actually. It's a difference that prevents people from becoming anuggas. Because after all, how can we possibly follow in the footsteps of somebody that we can never follow in the footsteps of? Because after all, how can we become like Jesus if we can never become like Jesus? By deciding that Jesus was begotten of God, it prevents us from actually following in his footsteps. Because he represents something that none of us can ever achieve. But if he was created, then all of a sudden it becomes possible. And because he was created like we were, then we can actually follow in his footsteps and achieve a similar degree of spiritual realization and understanding and advancement. It's a very critical point. It's very essential that people understand that, yes, this is possible. Prabhupada even said, our movement is a movement of becoming nitya-siddha. Yes, we may have been born nitya-bhada. Nitya-bhada means eternally conditioned. Nitya-siddha means eternally liberated. But just because we may have been born nitya-bhada doesn't mean that we have no possibility of becoming nitya-siddha. If there's no possibility, then what's the use? Why try? So this movement, this process of Krishna consciousness, is a process of traversing from being nitya-bhada to becoming nitya-siddha, to becoming eternally liberated. The end goal is within everyone's reach. It's not denied to anyone. But due to material conditioning, sometimes people like to ascribe or not ascribe, but exalt beyond the reaches of achievement these great devotees. Even though, yes, they are great, and they performed amazing activities, and they had an extraordinary, sterling level of spiritual realization. But by saying that we can follow in their footsteps does not diminish their achievements. Rather, it makes accessible what this whole process of Krishna consciousness is about. It opens the door for us too, to also follow in their footsteps, to apply this process of Krishna consciousness, to become pure in our realization and achieve the ultimate goal, going back to Krishna. Another example of great devotees who achieved this, and who weren't disturbed by different changes, weren't disturbed by heat or cold, summer or winter. They weren't disturbed by where they could possibly go, whether it be hell, heaven, even liberation, even going back to the spiritual world. So in the 12th chapter of the 4th canto, it describes Dhruva Maharaja's ascension to the heavenly planets. I'm sorry, not the heavenly planets. Back to Vaikuntha. And it's really interesting. Texts 28 to 33. I'll just read them. The great sage Maitreya continued. This is beginning with text 28. Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Text 29. Before getting aboard, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the airplane, circumambulated it, and also offered obeisances to the associates of Vishnu. In the meantime, he became as brilliant and illuminating as molten gold. He was thus completely prepared to board the transcendental plane. Text 30. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, He took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death, and thus he got upon the airplane, which was as big as a house. Text 31. At that time, drums and kettle drums resounded from the sky. The chief Gandharvas began to sing, and the other demigods showered flowers like torrents of rain upon Dhruva Maharaj. Text 32. Dhruva is seated in the transcendental airplane, which is just about to start, when he remembered his poor mother, Suniti. He thought to himself, "How shall I go alone to the Vaikuntha planet and leave behind my poor mother?" Text 33. The great associates of Vaikuntha Loka, Nanda and Sunanda, could understand the mind of Dhruva Maharaj, and thus they showed him that his mother, Suniti, was going forward in another plane. So this is actually rather amazing. So the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, the Vishnu Dutas, came to personally escort Dhruva Maharaj back to Vaikuntha Loka. So somebody who was concerned about where it was they were going would just jump at the chance, and they wouldn't pay proper attention to observing proper etiquette. After all, one could easily justify breaking etiquette by saying, "Oh, well, you know, pure devotees are above the rules and regulations. They don't need to follow the rules and regulations." But as Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, that a pure devotee still follows the rules and regulations, because a pure devotee doesn't feel himself to be on the topmost platform. An Uttama Adhikari doesn't view himself as an Uttama Adhikari. An Uttama Adhikari views everyone else as being more advanced than he. And consequently, they still follow the rules and regulations, not only out of humility, but also in order to set a precedent, to set an example. That even though they are so spiritually qualified, still, they follow the rules and regulations so as not to bewilder those who are on a lower platform of understanding. Because if the topmost spiritually realized people neglected the rules and regulations, those who were neophyte in the understanding would neglect the rules and regulations thinking, "Oh, well, these aren't necessary. These rules and regulations won't give me pure devotion, therefore I can neglect them." But that's an improper understanding. So what does he do? As soon as Dhruva Maharaj hears the entreaties of the Vishnu Dutas, he takes his time. He goes and he takes a bath. He cleanses himself. And then he performs his daily spiritual duties, his regular sadhana. It's not that he gets the invitation from the Vishnu Dutas and then he drops everything, he just forgets it all and jumps on the airplane. No, he takes his bath, he performs his regular morning sadhana, and then what does he do? He pays his obeisances to all the sages there at the holy place where he was staying on the banks, begging for the blessings of all these sadhus. How is it that he's begging blessings? Here he is, ready to board the Vaikuntha plane, and he's begging the blessings of the sadhus at this tirtha. And then once he actually boards the plane and he's just about to take off, he's not just thinking about himself, "Oh, let me get out of here as soon as I can. I can't wait to leave this material world. It's such a stinking, rotten place." Thinking about his own welfare. No, he's thinking about his mother, his first guru. His mother is his Vartma Pradarshika guru, because she was the one who told him in the first place, "Go to the forest because Krishna is there in the forest." So he's thinking about his first guru, his mother. And he's thinking, "How can I go back to the spiritual planets without my mother, without my guru?" And so then Nanda and Sunanda, understanding his mind, show him that his mother is actually on a separate Vaikuntha plane going back with him. So this is somebody who is equipoised in his mind. He's not concerned about where he's going. He's not concerned about the distresses or the benefits of what activities he's engaged in. He's worried about performing his duty, doing his service, following the regulative principles, observing the ABCs, not being falsely puffed up with being some Rasika Bhakta. No, he's just performing his standard duties. And performing his standard duties is actually what makes him so exalted and what gives him his tremendous spiritual strength. So if we can take the example of these great devotees, these great souls, and apply it within our life, then we also can achieve the same result too. It's possible for everyone. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Archita Prabhu. There's a microphone in the closet there. Baninath, if you can get it for him, please. Oh, partially. But she was in a state of disarray. Yes, Prabhu.
I was listening to a lecture of Radhanath Swami yesterday, and he was talking about a devotee who worshipped a deity of Lord Narasimhadev, and he was saying that he would offer all kinds of weapons to Lord Narasimhadev. He would offer swords and nunchucks, and he would even go as far as offering like rifles and machine guns. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Don't keep those in the ashram. Yes, please. No shotguns and nunchucks. Nothing illegal. Anyone else? Jai. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.